exposed to the skin. He lay shivering under his blanket, and his torn face awakened from its numbness, and his whole head throbbed. It was an hour more before Al came in. He moved cautiously near and stepped on Tom's wet clothes.
"Shh," said Tom.
Al whispered,
"You wake? How'd you get wet?"
"Shh," said Tom.
"Tell you in the morning."
Pa turned on his back, and his snoring filled the room with gasps and snorts.
"You're cold," Al said.
"Shh, go to sleep." The little square of the window showed gray against the black of the room. Tom did not sleep. The nerves of his wounded face came back to life and throbbed, and his cheekbone ached, and his broken nose bulged and pulsed with pain that seemed to toss him about, to shake him. He watched the little square window, saw the stars slide down over it and drop from sight. At intervals, he heard the footsteps of the watchman. At last, the roosters crowed far away, and gradually the window lightened. Tom touched his swollen face with his fingertips, and at his movement Al groaned and murmured in his sleep. The dawn came finally. In the houses, packed together, there was a sound of movement, a crash of breaking sticks, a little clatter of pans. In the graying gloom, Ma sat up suddenly. Tom could see her face, swollen with sleep. She looked at the window for a long moment, and then she threw the blanket off and found her dress. Still sitting down, she put it over her head and held her arms up and let the dress slide down to her waist. She stood up and pulled the dress down around her ankles. Then, in bare feet, she stepped carefully to the window and looked out, and while she stared at the growing light, her quick fingers unbraided her hair and smoothed the strands and braided them up again. Then she clasped her hands in front of her and stood motionless for a moment. Her face was lighted sharply by the window. She turned, stepped carefully among the mattresses, and found the lantern. The shade screeched up, and she lighted the wick. Pa rolled over and blinked at her. She said,
"Pa, you got more money?"
"Huh? Yeah, paper wrote for 60 cents.
"Well, get up and go buy some flour and lard. Quick now."
Pa yawned.
"Maybe the store ain't open."
"Make 'em open it. Got to get something in you, fellas. You got to get out to work."
Pa struggled into his overalls and put on his rusty coat. He went sluggishly out the door, yawning and stretching. The children awakened and watched from under their blanket like mice. Pale light filled the room now, but colorless light before the sun. Ma glanced at the mattresses. Uncle John was awake. Al slept heavily. Her eyes moved to Tom. For a moment she peered at him, and then she moved quickly to him. His face was puffed and blue, and the blood was dried black on his lips and chin. The edges of the torn cheek were gathered and tight.
"Tom," she whispered, "what's the matter?"
"Shh," he said. "Don't talk loud. I got in a fight."
"Tom."
"I couldn't help it, Ma."
She knelt down beside him.
"You in trouble?"
He was a long time answering.
"Yeah," he said, "in trouble. I can't go out to work. I got to hide."
The children crawled near on their hands and knees, staring greedily.
"What's the matter with him, Ma?"
"Hush," Ma said.
"Go wash up."
"We got no soap."
"Well, use water."
"What's the matter with Tom?"
"Now you hush, and don't you tell nobody."
They backed away and squatted down against the far wall, knowing they would not be inspected. Ma asked,
"Is it bad?"
"Nose busted."
"I mean the trouble."
"Yeah, bad."
Al opened his eyes and looked at Tom.
"Well, for Christ's sake, what was you in?"
"What's the matter?" Uncle John asked. Pa clumped in.
They was open, all right.
He put a tiny bag of flour and his package of lard on the floor beside the stove.
What's the matter?
He asked. Tom braced himself on one elbow for a moment, and then he lay back.
Jesus, I'm weak. I'm gonna tell you once, so I'll tell all of you. How about the kids?
Ma looked at them, huddled against the wall.
Go wash your face.
No, Tom said. They got to hear. They got to know. They might blab if they don't know. What the hell is this?
Pa demanded.
I'm a-gonna tell. Last night I went out to see what all the yelling was about, and I come on Casey.
The preacher?
Yeah, Pa, the preacher. Only he was a-leading the strike. They come for him.
Pa demanded,
Who come for him?
I don't know. Same kind of guys that turned us back on the road that night. Had pick handles.
He paused.
They killed him. Busted his head. I was standing there. I went nuts. Grabbed the pick handle.
He looked bleakly back at the night. The darkness, the flashlights as he spoke.
I clubbed a guy.
Ma's breath caught in her throat. Pa stiffened.
Kill him?
He asked softly.
I don't know. I was nuts. Tried to.
Ma asked,
Was you saw?
I don't know. I don't know, I guess so. They had the lights on us.
For a moment, Ma stared into his eyes.
Pa, she said, break up some boxes. We got to get breakfast. You got to go to work.
Ruthie, Winfield,
if anybody asked you, Tom is sick. You hear? If you tell, he'll get sent to jail. You hear?
Yes, ma'am.
Keep your eye on him, John. Don't let him talk to nobody.
She built the fire as Pa broke the boxes that had held the goods. She made her dough, put a pot of coffee to boil. The light wood caught and roared its flame in the chimney. Pa finished breaking the boxes. He came near to Tom.
Casey, he was a good man. What'd he want to mess with that stuff for?
Tom said dully,
They come to work for 5 cents a box.
That's what we're getting.
Yeah? What we was a-doing was breaking strike. They give them fellas 2.5 cents.
You can't eat on that.
I know, Tom said wearily. That's why they struck. Well, I think they bust that strike last night. We'll maybe be getting 2.5 cents today.
Why, the sons of bitches.
Yeah, Pa. You see? Casey was still a... good man. God damn it. I can't get that picture out of my head. Him laying there, head just crushed flat and oozing. Jesus.
He covered his eyes with his hand.
Well, what are we gonna do?
Uncle John asked. Al was standing up now.
Well, by God, I know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna get out of it.
No, you ain't, Al. Tom said, We need you now. I'm the one. I'm a danger now. Soon's I get on my feet, I got to go.
Ma worked at the stove. Her head was half turned to hear. She put grease in the frying pan, and when it whispered with heat, she spooned the dough into it. Tom went on,
You got to stay, Al. You got to take care of the truck.
Well, I don't like it.
Can't help it, Al. It's your folks. You can help 'em. I'm a danger to 'em.
Al grumbled angrily.
I don't know why I ain't let to get me a job in a garage.
Later, maybe.
Tom looked past him, and he saw Rose of Sharon lying on the mattress. Her eyes were huge, opened wide.
Don't worry, he called to her. Don't you worry.
Gonna get you some milk today.
She blinked slowly and didn't answer him. Pa said,
We gotta know, Tom. Think you killed this fella?
I don't know. It was dark, and somebody smacked me. I don't know. I hope so. I hope I killed the bastard.
Tom,
Ma called.
Don't talk like that.
From the street came the sound of many cars moving slowly. Pa stepped to the window and looked out.
There's a whole slew of new people coming in, he said.
I guess they bust a strike all right, said Tom. I guess you'll start at 2.5 cents.
But a fella could work at a run and still he couldn't eat.
I know, said Tom. Eat windfall peaches. That'll keep you up.
Ma turned the dough and stirred the coffee.
Listen to me, she said. I'm getting cornmeal today. We're gonna eat cornmeal mush, and soon as we get enough for gas, we're moving away. This ain't a good place, and I ain't gonna have Tom out alone, no sir.
You can't do that, Ma. I tell you, I'm just a danger to you.
Her chin was set. That's what we'll do. Here, come eat this here and then get out to work. I'll come out soon's I get washed up. We got to make some money. They ate the fried dough so hot that it sizzled in their mouths, and they tossed the coffee down and filled the cups and drank more coffee. Uncle John shook his head over his plate.
Don't look like we're gonna get shit of this here. I bet it's my sin. Aw, shut up,
Pa cried.
We ain't got the time for your sin now. Come on now, let's get out to her. Kids, you come help. Ma's right, we got to go out of here.
When they were gone, Ma took a plate and a cup to Tom.
Better eat a little something.
I can't, Ma. I'm so darn sore I couldn't chew.
You better try.
No, I can't, Ma.
She sat down on the edge of his mattress.
You got to tell me, she said. I got to figure how it was. I got to keep straight. What was Casey a-doing? Why'd they kill him?
He was just standing there with the lights on him.
What did he say? Can you remember what he says?
Tom said,
Sure. Casey said, You got no right to starve people. And then this heavy fella called him a red son of a bitch. And Casey says, You don't know what you're doing. And then this guy smashed him.
Ma looked down. She twisted her hands together.
That's what he said. You don't know what you're doing?
Yeah.
Ma said,
I wished Grandma could have heard.
Ma, I didn't know what I was a-doing, no more'n when you take a breath. I didn't even know I was gonna do it.
It's all right. I wished you didn't do it. I wished you wasn't there. But you done what you had to do. I can't read no fault on you.
She went to the stove and dipped a cloth in the heating dish water.
Here, she said, put that there on your face.
He laid the warm cloth over his nose and cheek and winced at the heat.
Ma, I'm gonna go away tonight. I can't go putting this on you folks.
Ma said angrily,
Tom, there's a whole lot I don't understand, but going away ain't gonna ease us. It's gonna bear us down.
And she went on,
There was a time when we was on the land. There was a boundary to us then. Old folks died off and little fellas come, and we was always one thing. We was the family, kinda whole and clear, and now we ain't clear no more. I can't get straight. They ain't nothing keeps us clear. Al, he's a hankerin' and a gibbetin' to go off on his own, and Uncle John is just a draggin' along. Pa's lost his place. He ain't the head no more. We're crackin' up, Tom. There ain't no fambly now. And Rosa Sharn, She looked around and found the girl's wide eyes. She gonna have her baby, and they won't be no family. I don't know. I've been a-trying to keep her going. Winfield, what's he gonna be this-a-way? Getting wild and ruthy, too, like animals. Got nothing to trust. Don't go, Tom. Stay and help.
Okay, he said tiredly. Okay. I shouldn't, though. I know it.
Ma went to her dishpan and washed the tin plates and dried them. You didn't sleep?
No.
Well, you sleep. I seen your clothes was wet. I'll hang 'em by the stove to dry. She finished her work. I'm going now. I'll pick. Rosa Sharn, if anybody comes, Tom's sick. You hear? Don't let nobody in. You hear? Rose of Sharon nodded. We'll come back at noon. Get some sleep, Tom. Maybe we can get out of here tonight. She moved swiftly to him. Tom, you ain't gonna slip out.
No, Ma.
You sure? You won't go?
No, Ma. I'll be here.
All right. Member, Rosa Sharn. She went out and closed the door firmly behind her. Tom lay still, and then a wave of sleep lifted him to the edge of unconsciousness and dropped him slowly back and lifted him again.
You, Tom.
Huh? Yeah?
He started awake. He looked over at Rose of Sharon. Her eyes were blazing with resentment.
What you want?
You killed a fella.
Yeah, not so loud. You want to rouse somebody?
What do I care?
She cried.
That lady told me. She says what sin's gonna do. She told me. What chance I got to have a nice baby? Connie's gone, and I ain't getting good food. I ain't getting milk.
Her voice rose hysterically.
And now you kill a fella. What chance that baby got to get born right? I know. Gonna be a freak. A freak. I never done no dancing.
Tom got up.
Shh, he said. You're gonna get folks in here.
I don't care. I'll have a freak. I didn't dance no hug dance.
He went near to her.
Be quiet.
You get away from me. It ain't the first fella you killed, neither.
Her face was growing red with hysteria. Her words blurred.
I don't want to look at you.
She covered her head with her blanket. Tom heard the choked, smothered cries. He bit his lower lip and studied the floor. And then he went to Pa's bed. Under the edge of the mattress, the rifle lay, a lever-action Winchester 38, long and heavy. Tom picked it up and dropped the lever to see that a cartridge was in the chamber. He tested the hammer on half-cock, and then he went back to his mattress. He laid the rifle on the floor beside him, stock up and barrel pointed down. Rose of Sharon's voice thinned to a whimper. Tom lay down again and covered himself, covered his bruised cheek with a blanket, and made a little tunnel to breathe through. He sighed.
Jesus, oh Jesus.
Outside, a group of cars went by, and voices sounded.
How many men?
Just us three. What you paying?
You go to house 25, number's right on the door.
Okay, mister, what you paying?
2.5 cents.
Why, God damn it, a man can't make his dinner.
That's what we're paying. There's 200 men coming from the south that'll be glad to get it.
But Jesus, mister.
Go on now. Either take it or go on along. I got no time to argue.
But
look, I didn't set the price. I'm just checking you in. If you want it, take it. If you don't, turn right around and go along.
25, you say?
Yes, 25.
Tom dozed on his mattress. A stealthy sound in the room awakened him. His hand crept to the rifle and tightened on the grip. He drew back the covers from his face. Rose of Sharon was standing beside his mattress.
"What you want?"
Tom demanded.
"You sleep," she said. "You just sleep off. I'll watch the door. They won't nobody get in."
He studied her face for a moment.
"Okay," he said,
and he covered his face with the blanket again. In the beginning dusk, Ma came back to the house. She paused on the doorstep and knocked and said, "It's me," so that Tom would not be worried. She opened the door and entered, carrying a bag. Tom awakened and sat up on his mattress. His wound had dried and tightened so that the unbroken skin was shiny. His left eye was drawn nearly shut.
"Anybody come while we was gone?" Ma asked.
"No," he said. "Nobody. I see they dropped the price."
"How'd you know?"
"I heard folks talking outside."
Rose of Sharon looked dully up at Ma. Tom pointed at her with his thumb.
"She raised hell, Ma. Thinks all the trouble is aimed right smack at her. If I'm gonna get her upset like that, I ought to go along."
Ma turned on Rose of Sharon.
"What you doing?"
The girl said resentfully,
"How am I gonna have a nice baby with stuff like this?"
Ma said,
"Hush. You hush now. I know how you're feeling, and I know you can't help it, but you just keep your mouth shut."
She turned back to Tom.
"Don't pay her no mind, Tom. It's awful hard, and I remember how it is. Everything is a-shooting right at you when you're gonna have a baby, and everything anybody says is an insult, and everything's against you. Don't pay no mind. She can't help it. It's just the way she feels. I don't want to hurt her." "Hush. Just don't talk."
She set her bag down on the cold stove.
"Didn't hardly make nothing," she said. "I told you, we're gonna get out of here. Tom, try and wrestle me some wood." "No, you can't. Here, we got only this one box left. Break it up. I told the other fellas to pick up some sticks on the way back. Gonna have mush and a little sugar on."
Tom got up and stamped the last box to small pieces. Ma carefully built her fire in one end of the stove, conserving the flame under one stove hole. She filled a kettle with water and put it over the flame. The kettle rattled over the dreck fire, rattled and wheezed.
"How was it picking today?"
Tom asked. Ma dipped a cup into her bag of cornmeal.
"I don't want to talk about it. I was thinking today how they used to be jokes. I don't like it, Tom. We don't joke no more. When they's a joke, it's a mean, bitter joke, and they ain't no fun in it. Fella says today, depression is over. I seen a jackrabbit, and they wasn't nobody after him. And another fella says, that ain't the reason. Can't afford to kill jackrabbits no more. Catch 'em and milk 'em and turn 'em loose. One you seen probably gone dry. That's how I mean. Ain't really funny. Not funny like that time Uncle John converted an Injun and brang him home, and that Injun et his way clean to the bottom of the bean bin, and then backslid with Uncle John's whiskey. Tom, put a rag with cold water on your face."
The dusk deepened. Ma lighted the lantern and hung it on a nail. She fed the fire and poured cornmeal gradually into the hot water.
"Rose of Sharon," she said, "can you stir the mush?"
Outside there was a patter of running feet. The door burst open and banged against the wall. Ruthie rushed in.
"Ma," she cried, "Ma, Winfield got a fit." "Where? Tell me."
Ruthie panted.
"Got white and fell down. Et so many peaches he skittered himself all day. Just fell down, white."
"Take me," Ma demanded. "Rose of Sharon, you watch that mush."
She went out with Ruthie. She ran heavily up the street behind the little girl. Three men walked toward her in the dusk, and the center man carried Winfield in his arms. Ma ran up to them. "He's mine," she cried. "Give him to me."
"I'll carry him for you, ma'am."
"No, here, give him to me."
She hoisted the little boy and turned back, and then she remembered herself.
"I sure thank you," she said to the men.
"Welcome, ma'am. Little fella's pretty weak. Looks like he got worms."
Ma hurried back, and Winfield was limp and relaxed in her arms. Ma carried him into the house and knelt down and laid him on a mattress.
"Tell me, what's the matter?"
she demanded. He opened his eyes dizzily and shook his head and closed his eyes again. Ruthie said,
"I told you, Ma, he skittered all day. Every little while, ate too many peaches."
Ma felt his head.
"He ain't fevered, but he's white and drawed out."
Tom came near and held the lantern down.
"I know," he said. "He's hungered. Got no strength. Get him a can of milk and make him drink it. Make him take milk on his mush."
"Winfield," Ma said, "tell how you feel."
"Dizzy," said Winfield. "Just a whirlin' dizzy."
"You never seen such skitters,"
Ruthie said importantly. Pa and Uncle John and Al came into the house. Their arms were full of sticks and bits of brush. They dropped their loads by the stove.
"Now what?"
Pa demanded.
"It's Winfield. He needs some milk."
"Christ almighty, we all need stuff,"
Ma said. "How much did we make today?"
$1.42.
"Well, you go right over and get a can of milk for Winfield."
"Now why'd he have to get sick?"
"I don't know why, but he is. Now you get."
Pa went grumbling out the door.
"You stirring that mush?"
"Yeah."
Rose of Sharon speeded up the stirring to prove it. Al complained.
"God almighty, Ma's mush all we get after working till dark?"
"Al, you know we got to get. Take all we got for gas, you know."
"But God almighty, Ma, fella needs meat if he's gonna work."
"Just you sit quiet," she said. "We got to take the biggest thing and whoop it first. And you know what that thing is."
Tom asked,
"Is it about me?"
"We'll talk when we've et," said Ma.
"Al, we got enough gas to go a ways, ain't we?"
"About a quarter tank," said Al.
"I wish you'd tell me," Tom said.
"After, just wait."
"Keep a stirring that mush, you. Here, let me put on some coffee. You can have sugar on your mush or in your coffee. They ain't enough for both."
Pa came back with one tall can of milk.
11 cents, he said disgustedly.
"Here."
Ma took the can and stabbed it open. She let the thick stream out into a cup and handed it to Tom.
"Give that to Winfield."
Tom knelt beside the mattress.
"Here, drink this."
"I can't. I'd sick it all up. Leave me be."
Tom stood up.
"He can't take it now, Ma. Wait a little."
Ma took the cup and set it on the window ledge.
"Don't none of you touch that," she warned. "That's for Winfield."
"I ain't had no milk,"
Rose of Sharon said sullenly.
"I ought to have some."
"I know, but you're still on your feet. This here little fella's down. Is that mush good and thick?"
"Yeah, can't hardly stir it no more."
"All right, let's eat.
Now here's the sugar. There's about 1 spoon each. Have it on your mush or in your coffee." Tom said,
"I kinda like salt and pepper on mush."
"Salt her if you like," Ma said. "The pepper's out."
The boxes were all gone. The family sat on the mattresses to eat their mush. They served themselves again and again until the pot was nearly empty.
"Save some for Winfield," Ma said.
Winfield sat up and drank his milk, and instantly he was ravenous. He put the mush pot between his legs and ate what was left and scraped at the crust on the sides. Ma poured the rest of the canned milk in a cup and sneaked it to Rose of Sharon to drink secretly in a corner. She poured the hot black coffee into the cups and passed them around.
Now will you tell what's going on? Tom asked. I want to hear.
Pa said uneasily,
I wish Ruthie and Winfield didn't have to hear. Can't they go outside?
Ma said,
No. They got to act growed up, even if they ain't. There's no help for it. Ruthie, you and Winfield ain't ever to say what you hear, else you'll just break us to pieces.
We won't, Ruthie said. We're growed up.
Well, just be quiet then.
The cups of coffee were on the floor, the short, thick flame of the lantern, like a stubby butterfly's wing, cast a yellow gloom on the walls.
Now tell, said Tom.
Ma said,
Pa, you tell.
Uncle John slupped his coffee. Pa said,
Well, they dropped the price, like you said, and there's a whole slew of new pickers so goddamn hungry they'd pick for a loaf of bread. Go for a peach and somebody'd get it first. Gonna get the whole crop picked right off. Fellas run into a new tree. I seen fights. One fella claims it's his tree, another fella wants to pick off'n it. Bring these here folks from as far as El Centro. Hungrier than hell. Work all day for a piece of bread. I says to the checker, We can't work for 2.5 cents a box. And he says, Gone then, quit. These fellas can. I says, Soon's they get fed up, they won't. And he says, Hell, we'll have these here peaches in before they get fed up. Pa stopped. She was a devil, said Uncle John.
They say there's 200 more men coming in tonight.
Tom said,
Yeah, but how about the other?
Pa was silent for a while.
Tom, he said, Looks like you done it.
I kinda thought so. Couldn't see. Felt like it.
Seems like the people ain't talking about much else, said Uncle John. They got posses out, and they's fellas talking up a lynching. Course when they catch the fella.
Tom looked over at the wide-eyed children. They seldom blinked their eyes. It was as though they were afraid something might happen in the split second of darkness. Tom said,
Well, this fella that done it, he only done it after they killed Casey.
Pa interrupted,
That ain't the way they're telling it now. They're saying he done it first.
Tom's breath sighed out.
They're working up a feeling against us folks. That's what I heard. All them drum corpse fellas and lodges and all that say they're gonna get this here fella.
They know what he looks like? Tom asked.
Well, not exactly, but the way I heard it, they think he got hit. They think he'll have...
Tom put his hand up slowly and touched his bruised cheek. Ma cried,
It ain't so, what they say.
Easy, Ma, Tom said. They got it cold. Anything them drum corpse fellas say is right if it's against us.
Ma peered through the ill light, and she watched Tom's face, and particularly his lips.
You promised, she said.
Ma, maybe this fella oughta go away. If this fella done something wrong, maybe he'd think, okay, let's get the hanging over. I done wrong and I got to take it. But this fella didn't do nothing wrong. He don't feel no worse than if he killed a skunk.
Ruthie broke in.
Ma, me and Winfield knows. He don't have to go this fella in for us.
Tom chuckled.
Well, this fella don't want no hanging, 'cause he'd do it again. And same time, he don't aim to bring trouble down on his folks. Ma, I got to go.
Ma covered her mouth with her fingers and coughed to clear her throat.
You can't, she said. They wouldn't be no way to hide out. You couldn't trust nobody, but you can trust us. We can hide you, and we can see you get to eat while your face gets well.
But Ma...
She got to her feet. You ain't going. We're a-taking you, Al. You back the truck against the door. Now I got it figured out. We'll put one mattress on the bottom, and then Tom gets quick there, and we take another mattress and sort of fold it so it makes a cave, and he's in the cave, and then we sort of wall it in. He can breathe out the end, you see. Don't argue. That's what we'll do. Pa complained.
Seems like the man ain't got no say no more. She's just a heller. Come time we get settled down, I'm a-gonna smack her.
Come that time you can, said Ma. Roust up, Al. It's dark enough. Al went outside to the truck. He studied the matter and backed up near the steps. Ma said, Quick now. Get that mattress in. Pa and Uncle John flung it over the end gate. Now that one. They tossed the second mattress up. Now, Tom, you jump up there and get under. Hurry up.
Tom climbed quickly and dropped. He straightened one mattress and pulled the second on top of him. Pa bent it upwards, stood it sides up, so that the arch covered Tom. He could see out between the sideboards of the truck. Pa and Al and Uncle John loaded quickly, piled the blankets on top of Tom's cave, stood the buckets against the sides, spread the last mattress behind. Pots and pans, extra clothes, went in loose, for their boxes had been burned. They were nearly finished loading when a guard moved near, carrying his shotgun across his crooked arm.
"What's going on here?" he asked.
"We're going out," said Pa.
"What for?"
"Well, we got a job offered. Good job."
"Yeah? Where's it at?"
"What? Down by Weed Patch.
Let's have a look at you."
He turned a flashlight in Pa's face, in Uncle John's, and in Al's.
"Wasn't there another fella with you?" Al said. "You mean that hitchhiker? Little short fella with a pale face?" "Yeah, I guess that's what he looked like. We just picked him up on the way in. He went away this morning when the rate dropped."
"What did he look like again?
Short fella, pale face. Was he bruised up this morning?"
"I didn't see nothing," said Al.
"Is a gas pump open?"
"Yeah, till 8.
"Get in," Al cried. "If we're going to get to Weed Patch for morning, we got to ram on. Getting in front, Ma?"
"No, I'll set in back," she said. "Pa, you set back here, too. Let Rosa Sharn set in front with Al and Uncle John."
"Give me the work slip, Pa," said Al. "I'll get gas and change if I can."
The guard watched them pull along the street and turn left to the gasoline pumps.
"Put in 2, said Al.
"You ain't going far."
"No, not far. Can I get change on this here work slip?"
"Well, I ain't supposed to."
"Look, mister," Al said, "we got a good job offered if we get there tonight. If we don't, we miss out. Be a good fella."
"Well, okay. You sign her over to me."
Al got out and walked around the nose of the Hudson.
"Sure I will," he said.
He unscrewed the water cap and filled the radiator.
2, you say?"
"Yeah, 2.
"Which way you going?"
"South. We got a job."
"Yeah?
Jobs is scarce. Regular jobs."
"We got a friend," Al said. "Job's all waiting for us. Well, so long."
The truck swung around and bumped over the dirt street into the road. The feeble headlight jiggled over the way, and the right headlight blinked on and off from a bad connection. At every jolt, the loose pots and pans in the truck bed jangled and crashed. Rose of Sharon moaned softly.
"Feel bad?" Uncle John asked.
"Yeah. Feel bad all the time. Wished I could sit still in a nice place. Wish we was home and never come. Connie wouldn't have went away if we was home. He would have studied up and got someplace."
Neither Al nor Uncle John answered her. They were embarrassed about Connie. At the white-painted gate to the ranch, a guard came to the side of the truck.
"Going out for good?"
"Yeah," said Al.
"Going north. Got a job."
The guard turned his flashlight on the truck, turned it up into the tent.
Ma and Pa looked stonily down into the glare.
Okay.
The guards swung the gate open. The truck turned left and moved toward 101, the great north-south highway.
Know where we're going?
Uncle John asked.
No, said Al. Just going and getting goddamn sick of it.
I ain't so terrible far from my time, Rose of Sharon said threateningly. They better be a nice place for me.
The night air was cold with the first sting of frost. Beside the road, the leaves were beginning to drop from the fruit trees. On the load, Ma sat with her back against the truck side, and Pa sat opposite, facing her. Ma called,
You all right, Tom?
His muffled voice came back.
Kinda tight in here. We all through the ranch?
You be careful, said Ma. Might get stopped.
Tom lifted up one side of his cave. In the dimness of the truck, the pots jangled.
I can pull her down quick, he said. Besides, I don't like getting trapped in here.
He rested up on his elbow.
By God, she's getting cold, ain't she?
These clouds up, said Pa. Fella says it's gonna be an early winter.
Squirrels are building high, or grass seeds? Tom asked. By God, you can tell weather from anything. I bet you could find a fella could tell weather from an old pair of underdrawers.
I don't know, Pa said. Seems like it's getting on winter to me. Fella'd have to live here a long time to know.
Which way we a going? Tom asked.
I don't know. Al, he turned off left. Seems like he's going back the way we come.
Tom said,
I can't figure what's best. Seems like if we get on the main highway, there'll be more cops. With my face this-a-way, they'd pick me right up. Maybe we ought to keep to back roads.
Ma said, Hammer on the back. Get Al to stop. Tom pounded the front board with his fist. The truck pulled to a stop on the side of the road. Al got out and walked to the back. Ruthie and Winfield peeked out from under their blanket.
What you want? Al demanded.
Ma said, We got to figure what to do. Maybe we better keep on the back roads. Tom says so.
It's my face, Tom added. Anybody'd know. Any cop'd know me.
Well, which way you want to go? I figured north. We've been south.
Yeah, said Tom, but keep on back roads.
Al asked,
How about pulling off and catching some sleep? Going on tomorrow?
Ma said quickly.
Not yet. Let's get some distance first.
Okay.
Al got back in his seat and drove on. Ruthie and Winfield covered up their heads again. Ma called,
Is Winfield all right?
Sure, he's all right, Ruthie said. He been sleeping.
Ma leaned back against the truck side.
Gives you a funny feeling to be hunted like. I'm getting mean.
Everybody's getting mean, said Pa. Everybody. You seen that fight today. Fella changes. Down that government camp we wasn't mean.
Al turned right on the graveled road, and the yellow lights shuddered over the ground. The fruit trees were gone now, and cotton plants took their place. They drove on for 20 miles through the cotton, turning, angling on the country roads. The road paralleled a bushy creek and turned over a concrete bridge and followed the stream on the other side. And then on the edge of the creek, the light showed a long line of red boxcars, wheelless, and a big sign on the edge of the road said, Cotton pickers wanted. Al slowed down. Tom peered between the sidebars of the truck. A quarter of a mile past the boxcars, Tom hammered on the car again. Al stopped beside the road and got out again.
Now what you want?
Shut off the engine and climb up here, Tom said.
Al got into the seat, drove off into the ditch, cut lights and engine. He climbed over the tailgate.
All right, he said.
Tom crawled over the pots and knelt in front of Ma.
Look, he said. It says they want cotton pickers. I seen that sign. Now, I've been trying to figure how I'm going to stay with you and not make no trouble. When my face gets well, maybe it'll be all right, but not now. You see them cars back there? Well, the pickers live in them. Now, maybe they's work there. How about if you get work there and live in one of them cars?
How about you?
Ma demanded. Well, you seen that crick all full of brush? Well, I could hide in that brush and keep out of sight. And at night, you could bring me out something to eat. I seen a culvert little ways back. I could maybe sleep in there. Pa said,
By God, I'd like to get my hands on some cotton. There's work, I understand.
Them cars might be a pretty nice place to stay, said Ma. Nice and dry. You think there's enough brush to hide in, Tom?
Sure, I've been watching. I could fix up a little place, hide away. Soon's my face gets well, why, I come out.
You gonna scar pretty bad, said Ma.
Hell, everybody got scars.
I picked 400 pounds once, Pa said. Of course, it was a good heavy crop. If we all pick, we could get some money.
Could get some meat, said Al. What'll we do right now?
Go back there and sleep in the truck till morning, Pa said. Get work in the morning. I can see them bulls even in the dark.
How about Tom? Ma asked.
Now you just forget me, Ma. I'll take me a blanket. You look out on the way back. They's a nice culvert. You can bring me some bread or potatoes or mush and just leave it there. I'll come get it.
Well,
seemed like good sense to me, said Pa.
It is good sense, Tom insisted. Soon's my face gets a little better, why, I'll come out and go to pickin'.
Well, all right, Ma agreed. But don't you take no chanst. Don't let nobody see you for a while.
Tom crawled to the back of the truck. I'll just take this here blanket. You look for that culvert on the way back, Ma.
Take care, she begged. You take care.
Sure, said Tom. Sure I will. He climbed the tailboard, stepped down the bank. Good night, he said.
Ma watched his figure blur with the night and disappear into the bushes beside the stream.
Dear Jesus, I hope it's all right, she said.
Al asked, You want I should go back now?
Yeah, said Pa.
Go slow, said Ma. I want to be sure and see that culvert he said about. I got to see that.
Al backed and filled on the narrow road until he had reversed his direction. He drove slowly back to the line of boxcars. The truck lights showed the catwalks up to the wide car doors. The doors were dark. No one moved in the night. Al shut off his lights.
You and Uncle John climb up back, he said to Rosa Sharon. I'll sleep in the seat here.
Uncle John helped the heavy girl to climb up over the tailboard. Ma piled the pots in a small space. The family lay wedged close together in the back of the truck. A baby cried in long, jerking cackles in one of the boxcars. A dog trotted out, sniffing and snorting, and moved slowly around the Jode truck. The tinkle of moving water came from the stream bed. Chapter 27. Cotton pickers wanted. Placards on the road. Handbills out. Orange-colored handbills. Cotton pickers wanted. Here, up this road, it says. The dark green plants stringy now, and the heavy bowls clutched in the pod. White cotton spilling out like popcorn. Like to get our hands on the bowls.
tenderly with the fingertips. I'm a good picker. Here's the man, right here. I aim to pick some cotton. Got a bag? Well, no, I ain't. Cost you a dollar, the bag. Take it out of your first 150. 80 cents a hundred first time over the field, 90 cents second time over. Get your bag there, $1. If you ain't got the buck, we'll take it out of your first 150. That's fair, and you know it. Sure, it's fair. Good cotton bag, last all season. When she's wore out, dragging, turn her around, use the other end. Sew up the open end. Open up the war end. And when both ends is gone, why, that's nice cloth. Makes a nice pair of summer drawers. Makes nightshirts. And, well, hell, a cotton bag's a nice thing. Hang it around your waist. Straddle it. Drag it between your legs. She drags light at first. And your fingertips pick out the fluff, and the hands go twisting into the sack between your legs. Kids come along behind. Got no bags for the kids. Use a gunny sack or put it in your old man's bag. She hangs heavy some now. Lean forward, hoist her along. I'm a good hand with cotton, finger-wise, bowl-wise. Just move along talking and maybe singing till the bag gets heavy. Fingers go right to it. Fingers know. Eyes see the work and don't see it. Talking across the rows. They was a lady back home, won't mention no names. Had a nigger kid all of a sudden. Nobody knowed before. Never did hunt out the nigger. Couldn't never hold up her head no more. But I started to tell, she was a good picker. Now the bag is heavy, boosted along. Set your hips and tow it along like a workhorse. And the kid's picking into the old man's sack. Good crop here. Gets thin in the low places, thin and stringy. Never seen no cotton like this here California cotton. Long fiber. Best damn cotton I ever seen. Spoil the land pretty soon. Like a fella wants to buy some cotton land. Don't buy her. Rent her. Then when she's cottoned on down, move someplace new. Lines of people moving across the fields, finger-wise. Inquisitive fingers snick in and out and find the bowls. Hardly have to look. Bet I could pick cotton if I was blind. Got a feeling for a cotton bowl. Pick clean, clean as a whistle. Sack's full now. Take her to the scales. Argue. Scale man says you got rocks to make weight. How about him? His scales is fixed. Sometimes he's right. You got rocks in the sack. Sometimes you're right. The scales is crooked. Sometimes both. Rocks and crooked scales. Always argue. Always fight. Keeps your head up. And his head up. What's a few rocks? Just one, maybe. Quarter pound. Always argue. Back with the empty sack. Got your own book. Mark in the weight. Got to. If they know you're marking, then they don't cheat. But God help you if you don't keep your own weight. This is good work. Kids running around. Heard about the cotton picking machine? Yeah, I heard. Think it'll ever come? Well, if it comes, fella says it'll put hand-picking out. Come night, all tired. Good picking, though. Got $3, me and the old woman and the kids. The cars move to the cotton fields. The cotton camp's set up. The screened high trucks and trailers are piled high with white fluff. Cotton clings to the fence wires, and cotton rolls in little balls along the road when the wind blows. And clean white cotton going to the gin, and the big lumpy bales standing, going to the compress, and cotton clinging to your clothes and stuck to your whiskers. Blow your nose. There's cotton in your nose. Hunch along now. Fill up the bag for dark. Wise fingers seeking in the bowls, hips hunching along, dragging the bag. Kids are tired now in the evening. They trip over their feet in the cultivated earth, and the sun is going down. Wished it would last. It ain't much money, God knows, but I wished it would last. On the highway, the old cars piling in, drawn by the handbills. Got a cotton bag? No. Cost you a dollar, then. If they was only 50 of us, we could stay a while, but they's 500. She won't last hardly at all.
I knowed a fella never did get his bag paid out. Every job he got a new bag, and every feel was done for he got his weight. Try for God's sake to save a little money. Winter's coming fast. They ain't no work at all in California in the winter. Fill up the bag, for it's dark. I seen that fella put 2 clods in. Well, hell, why not? I'm just balancing the crooked scales. Now here's my book. 312 pounds. Right. Jesus, he never argued. His scales must be crooked. Well, that's a nice day anyways. They say 1,000 men are on their way to this field. We'll be fighting for a row tomorrow. We'll be snatching cotton, quick. Cotton pickers wanted. More men picking, quicker to the gin. Now into the cotton camp. Side meat tonight, by God. We got money for side meat. Stick out a hand to the little fella, he's wore out. Run in ahead and get us 4 pound of side meat. The old woman'll make some nice biscuits tonight, if she ain't too tired. Chapter 28. The boxcars, 12 of them, stood end to end on a little flat beside the stream. There were 2 rows of 6 each, the wheels removed. Up to the big sliding doors, slatted planks ran for catwalks. They made good houses, watertight and draftless, room for 24 families, 1 family in each end of each car. No windows, but the wide doors stood open. In some of the cars, a canvas hung down in the center of the car, while in others only the position of the door made the boundary. The Jodes had 1 end of an end car. Some previous occupant had fitted up an oil can with a stovepipe, had made a hole in the wall for the stovepipe. Even with the wide door open, it was dark in the ends of the car. Ma hung the tarpaulin across the middle of the car.
"It's nice," she said. "It's almost nicer than anything we had except the government camp."
Each night she unrolled the mattresses on the floor, and each morning rolled them up again. And every day they went into the fields and picked the cotton, and every night they had meat. On a Saturday they drove into Tulare, and they bought a tin stove and new overalls for Al and Pa and Winfield and Uncle John, and they bought a dress for Ma and gave Ma's best dress to Rose of Sharon.
"She's so big," Ma said. "Just a waste of good money to get her a new dress now."
The Jodes had been lucky. They got in early enough to have a place in the boxcars. Now the tents of the latecomers filled the little flat, and those who had the boxcars were old-timers, and in a way, aristocrats. The narrow stream slipped by, out of the willows and back into the willows again. From each car a hard-beaten path went down to the stream. Between the cars the clothes lines hung, and every day the lines were covered with drying clothes. In the evening they walked back from the fields, carrying their folded cotton bags under their arms. They went into the store which stood at the crossroads, and there were many pickers in the store, buying their supplies. "How much today?"
"We're doing fine. We made 3.5 today. Wish she'd keep up. Them kids is getting to be good pickers. Ma's worked them up a little bag for each. They couldn't tow a growed-up bag. Dump into ours. Made bags out of a couple old shirts. Work fine."
And Ma went to the meat counter, her forefinger pressed against her lips, blowing on her finger, thinking deeply.
"Might get some pork chops," she said. "How much?"
30 cents a pound, ma'am."
"Well, let me have 3 pounds, and a nice piece of boilin' beef. My girl can cook it tomorrow, and a bottle of milk for my girl. She dotes on milk. Gonna have a baby. Nurse lady told her to eat lots of milk. Now, let's see, we got potatoes."
Pa came close, carrying a can of syrup in his hands.
"Might get this here," he said. "Might have some hot cakes."
Ma frowned.
Well, yes. Here, we'll take this here. Now, We got plenty lard.
Ruthie came near, in her hands two large boxes of cracker